the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore via a series of tubes that we like to call Netscape Navigator. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I had a nice weekend. It was relaxing. We stayed at home. Kiddo was a little bit sick, but he got past it. What I did not do, I did not go to Gwar.
Yeah.
You, on the other hand, went to Gwar, and we're going to talk basketball. Don't worry, people. We will talk basketball. But by God, we have got to talk about you going to Gwar last night.
Let's just say it's a little out of my element.
I get these texts at like 11:40 at night last night from Harper that are like, it sounds like dialogue from Saw. I mean, it was just, I can't read them over the air.
No, oh God, no. No, you cannot. Let's just say I guess there's no shock factor because the people going are quite expecting this. I had a slight idea of what was going to happen, but I really had no idea what was going to happen.
Are they as impressive visually as they seem, or does it seem kind of schlocky? Would they do better with CGI?
No. It's exactly what they need to do is what they do. It's just a lot of costume, a lot of loud screaming music. Here's the thing. I couldn't really understand anything, but I also don't know the songs. Right. Not to sound so old, but then it just sounds like noise to me because I don't know the songs. Until I think one of their guitarists passed last year, and actually Minneapolis was the last show he played before he died. I think he had a heart attack. And so they did a tribute to him and played Kansas' Carry On My Wayward Son towards the end of the show in tribute to him, and it was phenomenal. So that song I picked up on.
That's amazing. I mean, Gwar, just tell me that Gwar covered that. And did they cover a Springsteen song?
Yeah, they did Born in the USA as well.
Oh, my God.
Which was amazing. Also unexpected. I think those were back-to-back. And then, I'm more of a rap guy. My first concert I ever went to was Boyz II Men and Montel Jordan. So, not that I haven't been to other types of concerts before. I just had never been to Gwar. And my lady friend and her brother wanted to go. She had gone, 14 years ago or something like that. She went when she was in high school. And she tried to prepare me for it, but really until you see it, not much you can anticipate there. But here are my two experiences with Gwar. Beavis and Butthead and that scene in Empire Records.
That's what I was going to say, because that's what I always think of is when Gwar is talking to him when he's on mushrooms.
Yeah, that's the only thing I've ever really known of them visually live. Like, I had seen pictures and stuff, but never a performance, and good God.
For those of you who don't know, Gwar is a heavy metal band that plays in, I don't even know what to call the costumes. Like,
it's kind of like
horror,
like,
fantasy?
It's like Mad Max meets Claymation. Death,
yeah.
What was that? There was that video game where you were just claymation characters fighting each other. It was like Mortal Kombat, but it was claymation.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember the name of it.
That's what it looks like if you just put all those guys in like Road Warrior costumes. That's what it would be.
If you're gonna have one rap artist do a collab with them, who would it be? I would go for MF Doom.
I would probably. I would just want it to be hilariously awkward, so I think I would go with Drake. Does Drake count as a rap artist? I don't even know what Drake is. Here's the thing. I like hip-hop, and I don't know what Drake is. Or maybe I'd go with, Chingy. I think maybe I'd go with Chingy, just to make it as awkward as possible.
So, yeah, Gwar's pretty terrifying. Yours is also terrifying.
Yeah.
The Memphis Grizzlies.
That's a segue. They have reeled off 8 in a row since losing to the Clippers. They are 8-1, just shredding teams. They played a fantastic game against the New York Knicks Friday night to stop the Knicks' unbeaten streak and really take. They're kind of at the top of everybody's power rankings, I would imagine. I mean, 8-1, destroying good teams. It's an impressive feat so far.
I have two thoughts. One is. They have the best record in the league with the strongest strength of schedule.
Yeah.
That's insane. I don't care if it's 10 games. That's nuts. Like, that is hard to do, 9 games. Like, that is difficult to do in this league. They have played good teams and beaten them. They played the best team in the league going in Friday night. It was at home. New York, I think, was on back-to-back. Like, you know, they were on back-to-back because they faced the Spurs the night before. So, like, to me, that wasn't a bad loss for New York. It was just a really good win for Memphis.
Yeah.
And this is what they look like when everything is clicking. My other thought is that it's taken me a while to really get into it because I'm just not used to it. Like, I mean, I'm like, oh, like when they started and they lost to the Clippers, I was like, okay. I was like, well, all right, you know, so you know, the Clippers are a really good team. That's fine. We're, you know, they're a class below them. That's cool. And then, you know, they won 3 straight and I was like, all right, you know, well, they've gotten themselves back on their feet. Oh, they won 6 straight. Hey, you know, they've really got something going here. And now I'm just like, wow, this team is really great. Of course, the other part of me is like, of course they're this great. It's November. Like,
right.
Come April, it's going to, you know.
But here's the thing. They have a 5-game homestand that they're starting tonight against the Nuggets. And the true test will be they play Nuggets tonight, which will be a tough game. They play the Lakers on Friday. And then after that, they've got Cleveland, Toronto, and Detroit at home. Like, they could run the table, start 13-1 here.
They won't, just because you said that, thanks, but,
You're really expecting Detroit to end this streak, aren't you?
Probably. I'll say that they won't. 3 years ago, they infuriated me, because they would do things like, they would beat the Lakers and then lose the Nets. Yeah. Like, that's what would happen with them, and now last 2 years, they've kind of stabilized, and now they beat the bad teams, they go, you know, 500 against the pretty good teams, they lose to the elite teams, with the exception of a few teams. But they play the elite teams really competitive. That's kind of been their MO.
Yeah. That 3-game streak they've had in the middle of the streak where they beat Miami, Oklahoma City, and the Knicks all by double digits.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
You know, they are surprising everything I could have imagined. It's great to see, though, because it's like Rudy Gay's playing well. He's playing within himself. He's doing what he does, but he's not doing too much of what he does that's bad. Randolph's back to being healthy. Marcus Gasol is so good at everything, Zach. He's so good at everything.
I know. I've been with you on this. I've tried to tell everybody. Everyone thinks I'm stupid with good reason, but not about that. That I was right about. Stupid about a lot of other things.
You know, Tony Allen is taking, you know, less of a role in the offense, and he's doing more of the, I'm just going to focus on leak outs in transition to get my points. The bench unit's playing well. Somebody mentioned this morning to Jeff Calkins, who writes for the Commercial Appeal, he retweeted this. Ellington's only shooting 23% if you remove the Miami game. It's more about the threat.
Like, yeah.
Having shooters to where you don't have to, where you can't collapse is so huge. Mike Conley, I cannot put into words how well he is managing the game right now. You can play point guard, you can be explosive, you can score, you can make plays. In terms of managing the offense, there are guys that are better at it right now, but the list is very, very short.
Yeah. And what would you say is the key to this team right now? Like, what's the one thing? Is it just health? I mean, they haven't had that front court together a lot the last 2 years. Is it finally that everyone's just healthy?
I think it's health in part. I think a lot of it is, I mean, I will say this. We don't tend to, I think fans in general tend to underrate how much time it takes for guys to gel.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because then we look at San Antonio and we go, how can San Antonio be this good? And it's like, they've played together for a effing decade. Like, yeah. That's how they're, like, everybody has been doing this for so long. And yeah, you got guys like Danny Green, who's only been in the system really, you know, 2-3 years, and Gary Neal and Tiago Splitter. But they've been in that system multiple years. When you have a team, and it's like Memphis really kind of got put together in 2010, and you know they struggled that year with inconsistency. And in 11, they were better, and then 12, they were like last year they were really better. They were a better team. Last year was the best season in franchise history. It really was. They just had a bad collapse in game one. They had a bad fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like, that's what last year came down to. They win game one, they win that series. I don't have any doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, I mean they just blew it to, you know, kind of a fluke performance by Reggie Evans and Nick Young.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to take anything away from the Clippers. That's great for them. But I don't want to punish the Grizzlies for that, because I'm like, look, those were two really evenly matched teams. They were both very good. You can say, well, the Clippers got destroyed by San Antonio, but, you know, San Antonio was on another level last year. But, you know, last year, my point is more that last year was like the best year in franchise history. And then this year, You know, they have everybody clicking together. They improved the one area that they were weakest. And I mean, this needs to go on record. Chris Wallace has a lot of things you can point to throughout his career as GM and go, what? You can point to a lot of things in question. What he has done with this roster over the past 3 years is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the decision to let O.J. Mayo go from a, I don't like it because I like O.J. Mayo as a player, but it needed to happen because he and Holland simply did not click. If you want a good comparison on the other side of that, look at what Jared Bayless is doing.
Yeah.
After so many years where Bayless did not, like, coaches would try and get through to him and it never worked. Like, Nate McMillan really, I think, screwed him up pretty bad. Like, I think Nate's a fantastic coach, but I think that there was a bad dynamic and that can really damage you. You know, Mayo actually references the other day. He was like in the before times. He mentioned something about that, which was he said the good year. That's what he said, which was his rookie year before Hollins got brought on.
Yeah.
And if you don't click with the coach, it causes massive problems. But Bayless, he's gotten through to him. Jared Bayless, Zach, I expected Bayless to be the same Bayless he's ever been, where it's like, okay, some terrible shots, but oh, he got hot. That's pretty nice. Some scoring punch. Look at that good play. Oh, he's so inconsistent. He's making passes and playing defense. I don't know what to do with that.
It's weird that all it took for him to become good was to look like Carlos Boozer. I really think that's what that's the difference. You know, I've never been a Bayless guy. I've just never liked his game. I've never thought he was going to be this, you know, starting point guard in the league that many projected him to be for a while. And I couldn't really point to what it was. I just didn't like his game, but he's kind of reined in the attitude. He's kind of reined in the I'm just going to go kill everybody kind of thing. He still has that, but he uses it in a team concept now. It's not him against everybody. It's him with everybody. And I think that's the key, because you put him in the role he's in now and he's figured out that this is a good role for him at the moment, and he's just destroying with it.
If you click emotionally with this team, you will feel better about playing basketball than at any point in your career. Like, their culture, and I can't identify with it, but their culture is so strong. And those guys, I mean, and it's really cool because they're not like the Thunder where they're all like, happy family! And they're not like Miami where it's like, business is business. Like, they are just very tightly wound guys, like, wound together. I mean,
yeah,
that really believe in one another and want one another to do well. They're coming to town in a few weeks, and there's two different features I'm going to probably work on to see if I can get. We'll probably do one of them, and then I'll do another one later in the season. But one of the ones I want to do, I'm thinking about doing, is focusing on the relationship between Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, because if there's two different guys in the league, it'd be hard to find it. And yet their chemistry and the way that those guys play for one another and with one another is really awesome to watch.
Those guys love each other, and they do have a fantastic chemistry on the court. And Randolph is really – he is a very limited player in terms of what he can do, but what he does is so overpowering. I mean, he's just so strong and yet has such a feathery touch with the ball – to where he can shove three guys out of the way, grab an offensive rebound, and then finish, you know, with contact or finish through contact while putting the ball just perfectly on the rim where it needs to die and fall into the hoop. I mean, the way he offensive rebounds and puts it in, it, like, there's just not many teams that can deal with that. Even teams that have the best rebounders in the world. You put him against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Pekovic and Love are arguably the best rebounding duo for power forward and center in the league. But you put them against Zach Randolph, and their strength is kind of neutralized. And then it just becomes a 50-50 contest of who, you know, who's going to get to the ball first. I mean, the way he neutralizes an interior's ability to rebound against him is just, it's really impressive.
I think if we're trying to define elite in this league, one thing that I would probably define it as is they have a skill set in which there is nothing you can do to neutralize it.
Yeah.
And Zach Randolph is one of those guys where there's just nothing. You can be taller, you can be bigger, you can have longer arms, you can be more athletic, and he still manages to find a way to do these things. And with the fact that he also has that face up, like, I mean, against the Knicks, he had a couple of those where he faces up and they give him too much space and he just clobbers them with that pull up jumper. Like, when you have that, it's such a deadly, deadly weapon. It's funny to me though, because I'm always like, you realize he's not going to drive past you, right? Like,
yeah, I don't get what the space is for.
Like, yeah, it's mostly, I think it's mostly a matter of that they're bowled over by his size. I think it's really it. I think that he just scares them. I think maybe that's part of it.
maybe you're right though. Maybe it is a there. If you give him space, you can see how he's coming at you before he destroys you, and maybe you think you can adjust your body better with that better line of vision, but then you back up too far, and he's just going to destroy you, and he's probably stronger than you anyway. So I would double and hope that they miss threes, but this year they seem to have a answer for that.
And, you know, I mean, and they won't play this well. I want to compliment them now because it's important to talk about. Like, they're going to go through a stretch where they play much, much worse while the Pacers go through a stretch where they play much, much better. Like, that's going to happen.
Sure.
You know, but if they – it's like I'm doing them. Knock on wood. Like, if they were to be healthy, if they were to be this healthy come the playoffs, there is not a team in the Western Conference that they can't push to 7 games. And yeah, that's really your objective.
Yeah.
You know, that's not saying that they will. That's not saying that they'll win. I made a bet with Ethan Sherwood Strauss of Bleacher Report and Hoopspeak last night. I said, it was like, look, if the Grizzlies make the finals, I will wear a giant blue bear suit. And I will hold to it. I don't think it'll happen because I cannot imagine a reality in which Memphis makes the finals.
Yeah, I love Ethan, but he did also badger me for an afternoon about whether or not he should put money on the Hawks winning the East, because why not? Because the odds were so good, and I kept telling him he was just throwing money away.
Right.
But he, yeah. I mean, he, you know what? That the Grizzlies thing is actually legitimate though, because with the uncertainty with the Lakers of whether or not they have enough in the new system they're about to really use to go. I mean, they might be one or two players away, and we don't know if they can pick those guys up in terms of role players, like shooters to stretch the system. And then the Thunder, they're still very good, but, you know, since losing Harden, they've kind of lost a little bit of their identity, and Westbrook's struggling, so they don't look like a lock. The Grizzlies coming out of the West wouldn't shock me. No, that's not true. It would shock me. It would absolutely shock me. But it's kind of a thing where I wanted to completely disbelieve it, but at the same time, this is the first time we've seen this team healthy. And, you know, them as a dark horse to come out of the West right now isn't that absurd.
It's one where if this was a team that you didn't, like, the Milwaukee Bucks are the second best team in the East. Like, you know they're not going to be there in the end. Like, yeah. There's things that you know. You can look and you can see. The Grizzlies seem like they realistically have a chance, and if nothing else, like, that's a huge step forward for a franchise.
Sure. If you could just take off J.J. Redick from the Magic and just put him immediately on the Grizzlies, I would feel like, oh my God, there's their one more shooter that they can use, and then I would probably feel like they are a finals contender.
Aaron McGuire of Gotha Ginobili actually suggested that to me the other day, and I said you couldn't put him on that team because of the chemistry, because of the locker room. And he was like, why? And I want to make this very clear. Like, this is not at all a black-white thing, and it's not at all – because, I mean, Marcus Gasol, right? Like, this is not at all anything to do with Redick's attitude. It's just that Redick, from my experience, has a different approach. And, again, we talked about this before. Like, you have to have exactly the right mindset to be able to fit in Memphis, and sometimes it's really surprising who succeeds and who doesn't. Like, Maurice Spates. Hollins is pulling a good game out of Maurice Spates. Like, his numbers aren't great, but what he's contributing is important. Like, Wayne Ellington is a key bench guy. Like, it's weird. And so I have worries that Redick makes, like, so much sense in basketball perspective that I worry about how it would work out with the chemistry-wise. But the skill set, I totally agree with. Like, I think the skill set is a perk. Like, if you find a pure – like, they could really use a pure shooter. A lot of teams could really use a pure shooter. Like Shane Battier, apparently.
Speaking of Shane Battier. Awesome. Awesome feature by you this weekend about Shane Battier, where he talks about really everything. And the kind of the most important thing was the idea of this being his most physical year.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything there. All the kind words everybody said, like, thank you, and everybody said, like, really great things about it. I put a lot of work into that feature, and while I don't want to use the podcast as, like, a model to, you know, talk about how awesome I am, I have other podcasts for that. It's one where I think the material really carried the piece. What's amazing, that was... When I started doing these, I was like, well, I'm going to need, you know, for the really big ones, for it to be really great, I need like 20 minutes of time. I got that done in 10 minutes. That's 10 minutes of me talking to Shane Battier and 2 minutes after the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird how much you can get out of limited conversation, especially when the topic is Battier. It was really great because, you know, he's such a mental player. And so I noticed, like, he's just getting his ass kicked night after night by these big guys, but he's doing a pretty decent job. He did it in the final, in the conference finals, in the finals last year, and they're doing it this year, and they've asked him to make the sacrifice and play at the power forward position, defend it so LeBron doesn't have to get beat up. And he's doing it, you know, he's putting in the work, and you can tell, like, hey, I love it because he doesn't lie about it. He's like, no, I'm fine. Like, most guys be like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm totally okay, whatever. And he's like, oh, God, it hurts. He's just like, it is rough. He's like, but that's what we need to do. He's like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, you know, it's tough, but that's my job. That's what we do, and we deal with it. It's great because he talked about – I had never thought about this. He talked about how small ball, one of the objectives is to keep them honest because their ability to space the floor hurts them in retrospect. So it's not just the Heat are able to play small, which means they're able to play faster in general or use LeBron at the four in terms of offense, but it's also whoever's supposed to guard Battier, which is usually a power forward because the power forwards can't keep up with LeBron's speed – they can't cover the amount of space that they need to, and they're not used to it, so Battier is getting all these open looks.
Right.
And you saw a lot of that against the Nuggets, where the Heat won a very, very big game. And it was really amazing to see. One thing that was kind of interesting, he said a lot of things that I thought were really interesting, including I quizzed him on Jeopardy, which was fun. He said a number of things which were – it was crazy because I even did like an after-the-buzzer kind of like you know, here's kind of the excess stuff that I've got on him that didn't really fit anywhere, and I still had stuff left over that was really that I didn't have a chance to really like put in there. And one of the things that was really interesting, I want to talk to you about this. I asked him, I was like, so when do you like reassess when you look at a player? Like, you know, when do you throw out the previous data to accommodate for how a guy has improved? And Battier said, he's like, you know, I really don't. And I was like, what? And he was like, after 3 or 4 years, you know what a guy is. He can improve in terms of what he does well and make it better. He's not going to change, like, his skill set. He still is who he is.
Right.
The sample size is big enough to where he's not going to be able to make enough improvements for it to really be a problem. I thought that was really interesting to think about from the perspective of improvement.
It is. You know, we always think, like, oh, this guy just needs to add this to his game. Oh, this guy could add this. It's really, really difficult to truly add something to the game. You can add adjustments based off what you do well. You know, you're a good 20-foot shooter. You can kick that back a couple feet to be a decent 3-point shooter. You can be a guy who attacks well off the dribble. You can turn that into attacking both sides well off the dribble. But to completely learn a new skill, especially at the NBA level, is so difficult. Even with the teaching and the coaching you have, it's just not something – the only thing you can truly do to improve, I believe, is slow the game down mentally to where you can – you know, you see guys who do that, and all of a sudden – it looks like they're a brand new player, but really they're just doing what they've always been good with, skill-wise, and slowing the game down to where they can pick where those skills fit in. And so I think that's a very interesting point of, you know, a guy pretty much is what he is after a couple of years. And I don't know that there's a lot of evidence against that to say otherwise.
I guess it was just surprising me to think about, you know, Kevin Durant. I think is there, and he said, you know, he said there are exceptions or God, there are outliers.
Sure.
That's why.
I mean, LeBron's an exception,
and maybe that's like you know, another way we can describe the elite status of guys that can really add on to their game when they're already at that level. Like Durant, I noticed last night, Durant's starting to work more in the post. He's not good at it, yeah. but he's working on it. And to me, that's more important. Like, he's not getting shoved out immediately. And to me, it's like, he's going to get there. Like, and when he does, that's a whole other level of hurt for teams.
I kind of feel like he's on the decline. I feel like he's done.
He's peaked.
Yep. I don't think he's going to add anything to his game. No, he is becoming more of an all-around player. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's just the superstars, the top guys in the league. Maybe they're the only ones that can truly add to their games because they are that talented.
Yeah, I hope Battier enjoyed you know, the interview, because I wanted to challenge him. He's a guy that does a lot of media interviews, and he's great with the media. That's why. I kind of wanted to challenge him. He liked the fact I did ask about, everyone asked him, who's the toughest guy to defend in the NBA? And he gets that question asked constantly, and for years it was Kobe. And it makes for a great soundbite, right?
Like, right.
Makes all the, now it's Durant. Now it's, he's 6'11", so that's kind of hard to guard. But I asked him what the hardest system was, and he talked about San Antonio. That was the first team out of his mouth. He said San Antonio, because they make you make so many decisions, because you have a split second to choose which poison you're going to take in terms of the perimeter closeout on the help side once they flip that ball to the other side. And it was great to kind of see that, you notice these things, and it's nice validation, because it's like, oh, we all think, San Antonio's offense is so great, and it's good to see that for defenders it's hard to stop as well from a mental perspective.
And he's always been one of those guys, maybe moving more towards the individual defense, that, you look at him and people are like, well, he can't play power forward all season. This is ridiculous. He's going to get killed. And it's like, yeah, guys are going to score on him. But guys are going to score on just about anybody in the league. What you need is just to make them work. Kobe used to get 30 on him, 35 on him, but he had to work for that 30, 35. Now, they often had the better team, so it would lead to wins. So it looks like he's just working Battier. But really, Battier's job is to, one, stop a guy. But if he can't do that, make him work throughout the game to where he's tired at the end, to where, decisions are slower. So much about defense in the NBA is just getting in the way and making a guy figure something else out.
And I thought, and this kind of dovetails into something that George Karl said. The other thing he mentioned, he was like the old Utah system. He said that was really hard to guard against. And he was like, it's kind of the opposite thing, where you know what's coming, but they execute it so well, and they put you in the same position to have to make the same hard decision over and over and over again on the pick and roll, that's where you end up having problems.
Yep.
And Carl was talking later, because I mentioned to him that Gary Payton wants John Stockton to present him in the Hall of Fame along with George Gervin. And I thought that was really cool. And he was like, man, that Utah team, they just used to pound us. He was like, I tried everything against that pick and roll offense. I tried every single combination I could throw out there, and nothing would work because of how effective they were in running it.
Yeah, sometimes that can be such a just sucks the energy out of you to have to make that same decision over and over and over, to where you could even just start second guessing yourself of, well, I just decided to do this. Are they anticipating that? So they're going to go somewhere else, and then they go to the same place. And it can be just such a mental grind to go against a team like the old Utah system that really just wanted to be more physical than you and wanted to just beat you into exhaustion in so many ways.
Yeah, so Battier was fantastic. I thought he was just a really fun interview, and I appreciate Shane taking the time. And it was good to get some insight on different things. He's just a really smart dude.
You should ask him who the easiest guy in the NBA is to guard. Maybe when they come to town, that's what I'll ask him.
That's what you should ask him.
Yeah, like, who's the easiest one? Who do you just yawn at?
So, some other things on the weekend. Have you gotten a chance to watch Lakers-Rockets yet?
I have not.
Some good things in there. It's funny because people don't really know. We have no way of knowing how much of it is D'Antoni saying, hey, can you run this? And how much of it is, him not doing anything at all. Because he's running practices, but Bickerstaff coached the game.
Right.
So, you got really no idea. They look a lot. They look fun, though. Man, this the Lakers team, they look really, really fun. Bernie Bickerstaff's going to go out with a really great coaching record.
maybe the best win percentage in Lakers history by the time this is over.
Somebody mentioned that he's going to have the best that he is. If D'Antoni coaches Tuesday, he's going to have the best winning percentage in Lakers history.
I saw highlights of the game, and there were, you know, Kobe has a triple double. I think it was his first since 2010, maybe first in maybe two seasons. And there was a play, so I'm expecting, you know, they show some scoring. I don't expect them to show rebounding highlights, but they show a few scoring, and I'm thinking, all right, he had a triple double. They're going to show some assists, and there's a, like a 4-on-2 fast break, and he just pulls up for three and knocks it home. And I was thinking, like, that was the one play I expected an assist on in the highlight package, and he just pulls it from the right wing. Like it was a kind of a phenomenal mental game to play with yourself to see what kind of highlights they were going to show.
I'll send you a clip of I pulled two different plays that they ran last night with Kobe playing pick and roll with either Dwight or Powell and using the other one. And it was like everything that you dreamed of when Dwight signed or Dwight got traded there is what has kind of become, because he runs the side pick and roll. It's top of the key pick and roll with Gasol, but he goes away from it, and the defender goes over to hedge. So he's got two defenders committed. So he bounce passes it between him to Gasol. Both low post defenders step up to guard against Gasol's mid range shot, and they completely forget about Howard.
Which, I mean, I'm not an NBA coach, but forgetting about the best center in the league under the basket, it doesn't seem like a good strategy.
Not a good look. It was his first his first triple double since 2010. He got versus Sacramento on November 3rd of 2010.
So I remember it well.
Just 2 years ago.
29-13-11, right?
No, 30-10-12.
Yep, that's what I said.
So he. But then there was another play where they ran the pick and roll with Howard. And both defenders lopped off to cover the roll and to try and stop Dwight, and they left Powell alone.
Oh my God, that's
and
the thing.
And he passes to Powell, and he knocks down the mid-range shot. And you're just like, and you can tell Houston's just like, oh God damn it.
Yeah, and now take Darius Morris out of there and put Steve Nash. That's scary.
Yeah, and they're playing fast paced. And I mean, the defense has still got problems. They're still not, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of defense played last night. They got a long way to go.
Yeah.
Defensively, and that's something the players are going to have to figure out. But I do think, you know, I will say this: it is maybe the most fun I've had watching a Lakers game, like watching the Lakers play in years. I mean, it was really fun to watch. They are a really fun team. I wrote a thing on Saturday or Sunday. So D'Antoni was supposed to play. Here's more inside baseball, so to speak, for you. D'Antoni's supposed to play Sunday night. The Lakers actually announced it. Team representative confirmed D'Antoni's going to play on Sunday, on Saturday. And, you know, we typically want these kind of cover packages to go into the game, and then we have the game recap, and it kind of flows out. So I wrote this whole thing about how the offense is going to work with under D'Antoni and how Kobe Bryant's going to run more pick and roll, because surprisingly, in 2005, which is kind of the best model if you want to compare teams, like that's really the best comparison, the 2005 team with Amari and Joe Johnson – and Steve Nash, that's kind of the best comparison to this team. Joe Johnson actually ran a ton of pick and rolls. He ran more pick and rolls than he ran transition plays or ISO. That was his biggest thing, is he ran pick and roll. And so I was like, that's probably how they're going to use him. And we saw some of that last night, whether that was Bickerstaff or D'Antoni. That's definitely what they did last night, is they used him in the pick and roll a ton. But what's funny is I wrote this entire thing for D'Antoni being there, and an editor asked me, one of our good editors on our remote desk, who do a fantastic job cleaning up my many typos, says, hey, do you want me to put in, should D'Antoni coach tonight, since it's not confirmed? I was like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Like, they confirmed it yesterday. It's done. I look like such an idiot when, like, Ken Berger pops in with the news from the presser, D'Antoni will not coach tonight, still feeling the effects of the knee. And I was just like, oh, God.
And then you shoot that email, hey, about that should.
Oh, the editor, and as he should, the editor emailed me and was like, oh, by the way, I fixed that for you. And I was like, so mad. Lakers have ruined my life. Lakers have made life very hard on me, comparatively speaking. I have a very easy life because I'm a blogger and I don't have to wear pants. But they've made life very hard on me over the last week and a half. I really want them to settle down.
And I feel like they're only going to make it harder because they're going to be the talk of the town. Like, all you're going to, you're basically a Lakers blogger now.
Yeah, well, I was a Heat blogger 2 years ago, and that was a the problem is you can't not do the Heat though. We have to write excessively about the Heat, and we have to write excessively about the Lakers. And I can hear Spurs fans and Grizzlies fans and everyone else saying, you know, no, you like, you know, why would you do that? You don't have to, you know. Well, but like, we write a lot about the other teams.
We also like to keep our jobs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing is it's like, man, if people didn't click on that, if people clicked on stuff about the Grizzlies, that's what I'd write about. So you're gonna have a hard time talking me into writing about that team. But you know, I wrote a thing on the Nuggets this morning for the Inbounds about how they suck kind of right now at least, and you know, like that won't do anything. But the Lakers thing, I know, will wind up getting a ton of traffic. Like, gotta pay the bills, man.
Let's transition to the schedule for tonight. We'll do a quick preview before we're done here. I don't see a lot that I want to watch. There's Nuggets.
Not a game.
Yeah, there's Nuggets, Grizzlies, Clippers, Spurs. Those are games I definitely want to watch.
I got one for you.
Huh.
Where's the game in your Charlotte Bobcats?
Though, you know what? I really was shocked that their winning streak stopped at 3.
I know.
It seemed like they were going to really just take it all the way.
They were in it right down to the end.
The Bobs against the Bucks.
But hey, that's the second. That is the second best team in the Eastern Conference versus a 500 dangerous team.
This
is the world we live in.
I don't want to watch Samuel Dalembert. I just don't.
But I want to watch Ekpe Udoh versus Bismack Biyombo.
Sure, that'll be fun for the 4 minutes that happens. But
You know what I honestly want to watch? I want to watch Brandon Jennings versus Kemba Walker.
Yeah, that is actually a good call. And my Tobias...
I never use this term. I hate this term, but that's swag. I mean, that's...
Ooh, there's a... You just prove why you don't use that term. I guess that's swag. My Tobias Harris man crush that started this summer. I went back and watched some of his stuff from last year and then saw him in Summer League. And... the Jennings-Ellis backcourt is very intriguing, and it's fun to watch in a train wreck kind of way when it's not really going that well. But it's taking shots away from Harris. And good God, can John Henson get some playing time?
I know.
I'm not a guy that's like, oh, you got to play the rookies. But that guy's better than Samuel Dalembert.
Oh, hey, by the way, you need to watch that Houston game. You need to see Terrence Jones. You need to live Terrence Jones. You need to experience Terrence Jones.
Oh, no. I caught that while I was, I think we were between acts at the GWAR show last night. I looked at Twitter real quick, saw your tweet, clicked on the CBS link, went and watched the video. That is, Terrence Jones, he did some bad things.
That was awesome. His stat line was good. He played really well. Like, he had a bad foul on Kobe, but man, like, oh, Terrence Jones, man, I'm telling you. You know, the later half of tonight's not bad. You got Jazz Rockets, which should be pretty competitive and fun. You got Grizzlies Nuggets, which I think is going to be a worse game than everybody's expecting. The line is actually, it opened at 6.5 for the Grizzlies giving, and it's now the Grizzlies giving 7. I think it's going to be a beatdown. The Nuggets are a mess right now, and I can't see them getting right. I really think the Nuggets are going to struggle, honestly, until probably mid-December. Figure out some stuff, and then get better just in time for them to hit their homestand, and then kick ass in January.
Can I confess to you that I am very excited to see Kenneth Faried try to guard Zach Randolph?
You know, I asked Carl, I was like, who's going to guard stretch fours for this team? And he was like, I think we have lots of guys that can. And like, it's one of those, like, you really want to be polite to the coach, and all I'm thinking is inside is, I'm like, are these people in your head? have you imagined them? Because you have nobody who can guard stretch fours on this team. Like, JaVale McGee, Kosta Kubos, Timothy Mozgov, Kenneth Faried, Wilson Chandler, nobody.
You should have just asked him, did you time travel and bring back 1994 LaFonso Ellis and not tell us? Because he has to pass a physical before he can play.
I'll give you a surprise interesting game and a surprise terrible game. The surprise terrible game, Spurs fans, I've written extensively about how great you are. I'm going to write more about it. I will continue to watch this team. I just don't want to. You're too good. Like, that's nothing on you. It's not a value judgment. It's just that I have a hard time enjoying you because you're too good. And after losing to that Clippers team the other night, and especially after that loss to the Knicks really angered them because they just destroyed the Nuggets. Like, worse than even expected.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Yeah. I think with the Clippers coming into San Antonio, they're going to be primed. Like, this is a game that feels like a, you know, because the Spurs are tend to take things big picture, and like, we don't get caught up in the regular season. There are certain games where they play angry and they want to like protect their professional integrity. This feels like one. The line is Spurs given 4.5, and to me that feels soft. It's down from 5. Like, I think it should be probably 5 or 5.5.
Oh, see, I like the Clippers in this game.
Really?
Yeah, I think that.
Jay Crow Cray Cray?
I mean, he's fantastic. I love him. It's Chris Paul. Like, Chris Paul just doesn't let this team kind of forget that they need to still prove themselves. And
he's the thing against San Antonio, too.
Yeah, and for some reason, maybe it's just coincidence, maybe it's the way it lines up, but he seems to relish destroying Tony Parker. I think he's going to keep them focused. I think it's a tight – I think it's the game of the night that goes down to the wire, and we're probably pulling highlights all night from it.
The surprisingly good game for you tonight, I actually really like Mavericks Warriors. The Warriors are competitive in every game, even though they're not very good. This feels like, you know, and I hate how people are like, ooh, Mavericks Warriors is a big game. I really don't like that because I'm like, look, that hasn't been a competitive matchup since the playoff series. But without Dirk, Marion coming back really gave them a boost. They're playing better. They're back to, like, it's weird how much of a difference Marion makes.
And they've still been really good at home.
Yeah, so I mean, they're favored 5.5, but I think that one could be a fun watch. So there's some good things. Hawks Magic is, oof.
No, I refuse.
Jeff Teague is 50-40-90, by the way.
I don't care. He could be 100-100-100. I'm not watching that game.
The worst one is Indiana-Washington.
Yeah, you know, I really thought Nene would be back around the start of the season, maybe miss a few games. And now, you know, who knows when he's going to be back. Wall still weeks away. That team without those two, I mean, they might not even be good with those two, but without them, they are truly atrocious.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have to end on one other news topic. We have to. We there's no way we can get around this. You only bowl once, Zach. Andrew Bynum has injured his other knee, besides the one that was keeping him out. He has injured his other knee while bowling.
This is like some Vlad Rad snowboarding, Monte Ellis moped kind of things.
The guys on the Sure Hoop Network were having a conversation about this, and I'm sure there's going to be a post out there about it, and it's not out there right now. I'll talk about it tomorrow if we can find it. Is this, to me, this one is worse than the moped. I think it's behind Vlad Rad for stupidest sports injury, non-sports injuries. I think it's behind Vlad Rad. I think it's ahead of the moped and the apple slicer.
He did, Lionel Simmons hurt himself playing Nintendo years ago, like in the early 90s. And, you know, if it was an Xbox controller, I understand you drop that thing and it lands on your foot and you can be out for a while. But he got like tendonitis or tennis elbow or carpal tunnel or something with a two-button controller. I mean, what was he doing with it? Like, he's just smashing it constantly.
Did he throw it constantly?
Yeah, did he throw it and bounce off the wall, hit him in the hand or something? I mean, I don't know what he did. That might be the most embarrassing. Obviously, Carlos Boozer's Carlos Boozerness. I think he tripped over a gym bag in the middle of the night and hurt himself. That might be up there too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the Sixers, it's.
Do you think he bowled Brandon Roy as the ball, and that's why they're both hurt?
I feel, you know, it's. I wrote this. It was for another site. I wrote for over the summer. I wrote this big thing about how I was really afraid for Brandon Roy, and it's not that I didn't want him to come back. It's not that I didn't respect his decision. It's not that I thought he made a bad one. He's the only one that can make that decision. It was just that I felt so worried about the disappointment of working so hard to come back and then having it taken away again. Because I can just imagine how crushing that is. And it hasn't been taken away from him. It's just arthroscopic surgery. It's just really killer that when you hear these things, you know, happen again. And it's funny because I'm talking so delicately about Roy and we're kind of laughing about Bynum, but you know, Roy, I think really, you know, there was never any question about his conditioning or his work ethic to get back from rehab. There was never,
right.
You know, the attitude is different. Maybe it's just the hair. I don't know, but I'm worried about Brandon Roy, and I really hope that this isn't what I kind of was concerned it would be.
I mean, who knows what it's going to be. We'll find out when the surgery's done exactly, what the situation is. He could be out a week. He could be out for the year, depending on what they find and what they decide to do. It sucks because for like just talking to him, and he could have been lying, who knows, but he just seemed to think like, I just need my conditioning up and I'll be okay. Like, he felt good. He just felt like he didn't have his legs under him. And all this is stemming from when he bumped knees. I mean, this is what the team is saying, is that all this is stemming from when he bumped knees in the final preseason game against Milwaukee. If this is just from a knee bump, and he looked good and looked bad at different points between those moments.
And you wrote about it, yeah.
Yeah, and there were times he looked fine, there were times he didn't. And it's just, I don't know. To me, it's a weird story to say, yeah, he bumped knees a few weeks ago and now he needs surgery. It doesn't add up. And I'm not saying anyone's lying. I'm just saying maybe that's how bad the situation is for him, that something like that can linger. And hopefully it's just, arthroscopic surgery and he's out a week.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks or something like that. If he's out 2 weeks, 2 weeks or more, the Wolves will have a chance to apply for the injury exception. I think they'll have like a year, $2.5 million contract. Maybe they bring in Mikal Pietrus. We could have a Josh Howard, Mikal Pietrus duo in Minnesota. That's exciting.
I can hear you uncorking the whiskey now.
The situation sucks. And it is kind of messed up that we'll joke about Bynum and be serious about Roy. But I don't know. It's just, how do you hurt yourself bowling?
He hit the lanes is what he said. I can only think that he slipped. That's the only thing I can figure is that he extended too far and he slipped. My thing was, there's a lot of ambiguity about what the situation is, whether he was completely honest with the team about it or not. There were rumors over the weekend, but those are rumors and they're idiots. But, like, at the press conference, I guess on Thursday night, like, or Wednesday or Friday, or I guess... Yeah, it was Friday, I guess. He said, oh, no, I heard it when I was compensating for my other knee, like doing rehab. And then ESPN broke it as, like, rumors were everywhere. Liberty Ballers had it, like, rumors of it. And then Saturday, ESPN broke it officially, kind of broke it, I guess, if you can break it officially. And then on Sunday, he confirmed it. So it's just like, it's never good, like... You want to tell these players, like agents, if anybody's listening to this and becomes an agent or works with an agent, just tell them to admit it immediately. Like, don't try and hide it. It's so much more embarrassing for you.
See, that's where I would disagree. I want you to come up with the best excuse possible and then have it be uncovered. That it gives us more to write about.
That's true.
Quick pick for tonight. Let's go Rockets Jazz. Who you got?
I like the Jazz. The Jazz tried out that big lineup the other night. The Rockets defense is just—it's for having Omer Sheik. They're so bad all over. Jeremy Lin's struggling. Everybody's running with that today. Harden, I don't think, can do enough. He can't be efficient enough. And they don't really have much else. And they're not playing the rookies, I think, enough. And they need to play the rookies more. So I think that I like the Jazz. I like the Jazz. I think he'll be comfortable with the wins by six or more.
It's weird that a Lin Harden backcourt would have a negative effect defensively on the entire team. That's shocking to me. I think I'll also take the Jazz, and hopefully we'll have more hilarious injuries to talk about tomorrow. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, sir.
That's all for the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. We will talk at you tomorrow.